What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Nerds!
Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Smart Travel doesn't just cover points and miles. They break down all the financial aspects of your trip, whether that's the best days to book, how to avoid hidden fees, or which fancy travel credit cards pay off, and which ones are just an expensive flex. If you want your travel budget to work harder, then dive into the best deals, products, services, and more with Smart Travel from NerdWallet, wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Wow, I was so overcome by the bad singing.
He's in the room with us, Brad.
I'm sorry. That was such an assault on my ears.
Ryan, don't you listen to him. You have the voice of an angel.
Thank you.
Says every deaf person in America. So I just thought, oh my goodness. I didn't know what to say. I was dumbfounded, speechless.
I guess I'm speechless now because of the pain. Normally, I got funny comebacks, but when it cuts that deep, I don't know anything.
Your words hurt, but your honesty is appreciated.
Yeah, there you go. Well, speaking of appreciating comments, I did want to respond to one comment that was on the posted on our YouTube channel, and that was a person we were talking about the Menendez brothers, and Ender says that self-defense generally allows the equivocal reciprocal force. And to end the threat. And that statement is somewhat correct. If someone is attacking you, you're always allowed to use force to respond to the attack. But in this instance, the Menendez brothers plotted the execution of their parents. They planned it. They planned it in advance. It was premeditated. So had there been an attack on the parents at the time that an assault was occurring, that would have been considered self-defense. But that's not what happened here. Because of the abuse, and we don't know that there was sexual abuse, but there's evidence of that, so we can assume for conversation purposes that there was sexual abuse going on. Because of that, the brothers then, in a premeditated fashion, planned the execution of their parents. That is not reciprocal. That is not self-defense. That is premeditated murder. And that's why I'm against any sort of a parole that would justify or an attempt to justify the planned execution of your parents. So I just wanted to deal with that before we moved on to other topics. Ryan, what's the poll? Tell us again about the poll that we got.
The poll today, YouTube live chat poll, is do you consider yourself blue collar, white collar, or other?
So how would you answer that question?
I would have to say white collar, but I'd feel bullied into it. I don't really feel like a white collar worker, although we're all office, so in that sense we are. But I actually would answer other just because I don't feel like a white collar worker. I mean, what we do is kind of strange, you know?
It does carry with it a certain, stigma. To be white collar, it's like, oh, these are rich people that don't. And maybe that's because I grew up in a blue collar home. My parents were truck drivers and stuff like that. But there was a stigma that goes along with being white collar. When I look at it, I go, man, I'm white collar according to my job. You know, it's an office job. I don't really like. I've never really left here with dirt underneath my fingernails, that sort of thing. But I think as a producer, you're about as blue collar and a white collar job as you can get, because there's having done blue collar jobs, there are elements of being a producer that are blue collar ish, reflective of blue collar, you know, like when we go on remotes, making sure that certain things are set up so that we can so we can stream or whatever. There's that aspect to it.
Can I just comment on what it means to be a producer?
Sure.
I was a producer for Dave Glover for about 5 months. Didn't last long because I wasn't very good at it. But being a producer in general, like if people ask what a movie producer is, I always hated this answer. But the more I got into it, the more I'm like, that actually is the truth, though. The producer is the one who does everything. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what they do.
Makes it happen.
And so the executive producer and all these different titles, they don't really matter. They might matter with who's paying
like
what. And
pecking order.
Yeah, they might. But the answer to the question of producer is it's a catch-all title because it's a catch-all job.
Yes.
You just do everything. And you make everything, all the trains run on time, and everybody happy, and you make sure everything happens.
Make sure the audio's there. Yeah. Make sure the video's there. Make sure that the stream is correct. Make sure that, you know, the guests are lined up. Make sure all of that. And then make sure that the live reads are ready to go. Anything that you, like, if the show happens, there's so many things, so many boxes that I got to check. So it's like I said, it's like a blue-collar position in a white-collar job.
Well, I grew up, my dad was a coal miner, Southern Illinois. Mm-hmm. I'm the first in my family to ever go to college. So, yeah, I've been around blue collar most of my life. But there's no question that an attorney is a white collar job. However, I'm the IT guy at my office.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm always hooking up computers. I'm under a desk putting the wires together with Velcro cable ties, and I'm hooking all this stuff up. And at those times, you know, it doesn't feel like a white-collar job when I'm under a desk hooking up a computer. That does not feel white-collar.
It's a little subjective, the question in general, which is why we ask it, because you can interpret it a little bit however you want.
It fosters discussion.
But being white-collar, does that just mean you work in an office, or does that mean you do things particular that would have pertained to an office, you know? Or the other way, let's say you work for a construction company, but you're not the one doing all the construction.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, what does that mean? So there's a lot of gray area there, which is why I'm looking forward to seeing at the end of the day, which I haven't peeked at yet, seeing what our audience says about themselves.
You want to hear some?
And if folks, let me just plug this. If folks want to go and vote now, Ryan, how do they do that?
YouTube.com. And then you type in Annie Fry and today's date will come up along with today's live stream. You'll see us right now animated. Look at my hands.
You're doing things.
Yeah. You'll see us on there right now on the cameras and you can participate in the conversation there and vote.
Yeah, do you guys want to see what some of the listeners have said?
Absolutely.
So Russell said that other than he voted other because he's currently retired. He was a blue collar worker for 20 plus years and then became a white collar worker and finished his career that way. He says he's glad to have done both. Vicky says that she was soon to be retired but has been in the administrative assistant field for over 40 years and not sure what that makes her. And I guess that depends on what type of administration you're assisting. Chris S. said a poll, I put white collar, but I'm in IT, and sometimes that's kind of both white and blue, which
I'm like you just said.
That.
Absolutely.
Ender says, I answered white collar, but also being in IT, I could be both because enough times I'm up to my elbows in equipment. I have been there too, Russell. And then Joe said, I am both. I change from blue to white collar depending on the hour of the day. I'm not a business owner, but I would imagine many small business owners are the same way. So this, I mean, that's just a few. So keep your comments coming in and we can star more and talk about more from that.
Well, that's the kind of question that fosters a conversation. And I want to use that as a transition to talk about a bill that was filed. Actually, it got initial approval in Jefferson City in the Missouri House of Representatives on Monday. And the point of this bill is to prevent anti-Semitism in public schools. And here's what the bill does, and I want to get your reaction to whether this is a good idea or a bad idea. The bill would require Missouri's Department of Education to assign a staff member to monitor, I'm putting this in quotes because this is from the bill, anti-Semitic discrimination and harassment, unquote. And also then to investigate whether schools have responsibility for these incidents. And it also encourages schools to teach pieces of Jewish American heritage. But this bill is creating a lot of controversy because of its implications, free speech implications. So is this something that's needed? Is this the way that you address that? And do you see that there's a situation where the harm could actually be greater than the good?
Did you say this is a Missouri bill?
Just in Missouri. And because, for example, at Wash U, we saw a lot after October 7. We saw a great deal of pro-Palestinian encampments at Wash U, at SLU. Now, those are at the collegiate level, not the high school level. But we also saw demonstrations at high schools in support of Palestine. And a lot of those protests turned into anti-Semitic rants, like the chanting of "From the River to the Sea," mm-hmm. Which is a phrase that is advocating for the extermination of Israel. So what do you think? Is this a good idea for this bill or not?
Do you know, does the bill state clearly what the ramifications are for breaking the rules?
It says in the bill that the monitors are there to report information about these types of anti-Semitic discrimination and harassment events to determine whether the school is responsible financially for those.
So does would that mean that Missouri would be maybe defunding these universities if they don't comply with it?
Potentially. Now, I think the bill is actually focused at secondary level schools like grade schools, high schools, middle schools. I don't know that it encompasses colleges.
Okay.
But from this example in the bill, they're wanting to set up monitors for the purpose of perhaps holding the school responsible for these types of incidents.
I don't know. This is a strange topic because mm-hmm. it's hard. That's why I asked about enforcement, because I don't really know what it looks like to enforce a good idea. I mean, it's not a bad idea, but I get caught in how could this be used negatively? Because right now, when you have the people in charge who are passing it, you go, okay, well, I kind of trust those people, so mm-hmm. must be a good bill. Well, no, hang on a second. What if somebody got in charge who you don't trust? How could they use that same bill? How could they put monitors all over the state to monitor your schools to do what they think is right? That seems dicey to me.
So was this just for anti-Semitism, or is this for...
Yeah, strictly for anti-Semitism.
I don't know. It just seems like putting a monitor into the schools is going too far. I don't think that schools should be okay with anti-Semitic rhetoric, symbols, you know, stuff like that. And initially when you were talking about this, I thought you were talking about colleges. And with the colleges, I was like, because my initial thought was, well, let's just let the faculty enforce the rules. You know, don't be a bully. And then you said, and it's like, well, maybe it's colleges, and in colleges, you can't really trust the faculty to do that.
No, you can't.
Because it's bad, but now you're telling me it's
more aimed at secondary education.
I think that you just have the last thing schools need is more administrative costs.
Yes.
That's the last thing that they need. The administrative cost is where most of the money in education goes.
I don't think this would require them to hire someone to monitor. It just requires that the school would have to assign monitoring duties to an existing person at the school.
So they're just self-monitoring. If there's a problem going on in the school already,
yeah.
What are they going to go?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we appointed Dave. Dave's really against what we're doing.
Dave.
Let's put Dave in charge.
I just think, you know, it's something like that. You know, I think that's a faculty and a discipline issue that already should be taken care of. But I guess the question is how many incidents are we having of the schools looking the other way on anti-Semitic things at the secondary level school?
Well, I think in high school, certainly after October 7th, there was a lot of that in high schools. And the sponsor of the bill is a guy named George Ruza. His parents were in Nazi mm-hmm. concentration camps. He came to America when his parents got released. And so there's obviously that emotional backdrop. And you'll find no greater supporter of Israel than me.
Mm-hmm.
I support them in every single way that I possibly can. I've even helped fundraise for Israeli soldiers in order to give them bulletproof vests
right.
as they go against the Hamas. Sometimes they don't even have bulletproof vests. So I'm a big supporter. But here's the problem that I have with a free speech perspective is that people are under this delusion that hate speech is banned in America. It is not.
Mm-mm.
And there's a reason for it. And I've had these conversations with my liberal friends. They say, well, hate speech should be banned. Okay. How do you define what hate speech is? That's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's not that I want hate speech to happen. I don't. But for the government to control it, they have to define it. And under Brandenburg versus Ohio in 1968, the U.S. Supreme Court found an Ohio law unconstitutional that banned the burning of a cross. And you think that is the ultimate expression of hate speech. Banned it. And the Supreme Court said you can't do that because that is speech. Even though it's repulsive, it's repugnant, it's reprehensible, I can put in all the adjectives here that we can think of, but at the end of the day, we don't want government deciding what speech is okay and what speech is not okay. For example, in Canada, if you say anything against homosexuals, it's considered hate speech. Pastors have been prosecuted in Canada for saying the Bible condemns homosexuality. That was defined as hate speech. They've been prosecuted in Canada. And so that defines, that demonstrates this problem, that if the government defines what is okay to say and not to say, then that standard is going to change over time. And eventually, whatever the government doesn't want will be labeled hate speech. And then you will be prosecuted for simply protesting against the very government that wants to lock you up for saying those words.
Right. And people forget the purpose of the Constitution is to protect the people from the government.
Exactly.
Not the other way around.
Not the other way
around.
And when
you put in hate speech requirements, what you're essentially doing is giving the government the power to police right. speech.
That's why the government, when it's policing speech, has to be, number one, content neutral. And secondly, it should be focusing on the actions, not the speech itself. For example, and I got into a debate with a guy when I used to have my evening show over on Camel X, when I was stating that all of these protesters in college campuses should be arrested. And then, of course, someone called up and said, how can you arrest somebody? They're protesting. Well, I wouldn't arrest them for protesting. But the right to protest doesn't mean the right to camp out. Doesn't mean the right to occupy a college campus for days and weeks at a time. And so they would be arrested for basically being on property that they shouldn't be on, trespassing. Not for their speech, but for the trespassing.
Yeah.
And you could do that here, where you say, well, we're not going to ban hate speech, even though it's hateful, but if you state that some individual Jewish person should be attacked, should have some violence put against him, that now you're encouraging action, mm-hmm. not just speech, that should be prosecuted. Well, so I do have a legal problem with it, even though I'm one of the greatest supporters of Israel you'll ever find.
Well, let's not let's not forget that on some of these campuses, they were actually preventing Jewish students
yes.
from going to class or basically surrounding buildings that they were
correct.
In.
And they had, I think it was in California, where if you were a Jew, you had to renounce Judaism in order to go into the library.
Wow.
That is reprehensible.
It's despicable.
So that's what the Trump administration is focusing on right now.
That's what the Trump administration is focusing on, is saying that if you as an administration allow actions against Jews that violate the Constitution, you as a university will be held responsible and will cut your funding.
And they are cutting their funding.
And they are cutting their funding.
They've cut $400 million from
right.
from one university.
Right.
Which
Columbia,
makes you go,
right?
Yeah, it's Columbia. Which makes you wonder, how much money
yes.
are these universities getting? That's nearly $500 million, and that might not be all the funding.
Right.
That was
that's
some
just
of the
some
funding.
Part of it.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that the Trump administration is taking those actions to protect the rights of Jewish students. You're not attacking the speech. They can still get up there and say all they want from the river to the sea. But when you're preventing Jewish students from going to school, that's an action. And that can be punished. Hey, we're over the clock here for the time to take a break. We've got more news of the day coming up next, right here on the Annie Fry Show. Brad Young sitting in 97.1 FM Talk.
Hi, this is Debbie, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help you with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple.
And I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
Yeah, we can also send you samples fast and free.
Wow, I mean, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, no pressure, no hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Oh, okay, whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over.
Blinds.com has covered over 25 million windows, all backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com now and save up to 40% site-wide. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Want to pull off the season's freshest trends? You just need the right shoes. That's where Designer Shoe Warehouse comes in. Loving wide leg jeans? Pair them with sleek, low-profile sneakers. Obsessed with the sheer trend? Try it with mesh flats. Feeling boho? Comfy sandals nail the whole free-spirited thing. Find on-trend shoes from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at DSW.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet, and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Indecision. Overthinking. Second-guessing every choice you make. In, plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out, beige on beige on beige. Ugh. In, knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
If you have health insurance, you might be able to see a personal dietitian for $0 out of pocket. Nourish connects you with a dietitian that fits your needs, covered by your insurance. Nourish accepts hundreds of insurance plans, and 94% of patients pay $0 out of pocket. Meet with your dietitian online and message them anytime through the Nourish app. With hundreds of five-star reviews from real patients, you know you're in good hands. Find your dietitian at usenourish.com. That's usenourish.com.
Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. You know, right here in the St. Louis area, we just saw a mayoral race just this week. And boy, they don't mess around with that. The new mayor takes office next Tuesday. Kara Spencer, the new mayor of St. Louis. And this is what she said when she was elected mayor. This was her comment, clip 14.
Oh, my message is that, look, I was elected to represent the entirety of St. Louis, and I hope to have the privilege and the honor to really build the trust through actions in the coming weeks, years, to be serving the entire city of St. Louis. And I think that'll bear out. We're really looking forward to making partnerships, new partnerships in particular, to build bridges and to build success across communities that haven't necessarily success in the past.
Well, the reason, and what I want to bring up for conversation here, is that she said she was elected to represent all the people in St. Louis, and yet only, I think, 14% of the electorate came out to vote. It was a pittance. When I saw those numbers, I was like, I was just shocked at the low turnout for the mayoral vote in the city of St. Louis. And is she really going to be the mayor of all of St. Louis, including the business people, including white-collar workers who work in the city and may live in the city. What are your thoughts on the mayoral election, and what does Kara Spencer need to do to reverse the trend? Because all three of us here are either in Illinois or from Illinois, but certainly St. Louis is the magnet. It's the anchor for the region. What should the new mayor have on her agenda?
Well, we pay taxes here, so we don't get a vote, but we do pay taxes.
Yes.
So
we should throw some tea into the river.
Throw some tea into that Mississippi River and say,
yep,
take that, Kara. No, I'm actually very much for Kara. I don't know what she's going to do. I understand ideologically that she's pretty far left. So is Tashara Jones. So is any mayor of St. Louis going to be.
Correct.
But the hope is that she's just competent, you know, on basic stuff. Hopefully she supports the police and she realizes that if you want to bring people and activity and money back downtown, which we desperately need downtown, after 2020, man, people fled like crazy and it was because of bad policies. So she desperately needs to be working with the business community, with police, and just change the image of the city to let people know that she's going to do things a little bit differently. It also comes down to just basic government functions. I keep hearing it. We just went through a really nasty ice storm in February where the ice, literally outside this building, there was ice preventing you from parking in the regular parking lane. And there's school buses because of school here that made you drive in the turn lane for over a month because you couldn't park. And I get that some storms are worse than others. I understand.
Yeah, and that was a particularly bad one.
And there's a lot of grace there because everybody in the region wasn't just downtown St. Louis that was dealing with it. Everybody dealt with that. Lasted a long time. But at some point, you got to go, yes, but why was it so much worse here than in my town? Because it lasted a while in my town, too, but it was worse here.
Yes, it was.
And all that kind of stuff, you go, I just hope that even if you're a very, very progressive, ideological person, you can perform the basic functions of a mayor that make your city attractive.
Yeah. I actually had a conversation with a couple people from the other radio station here last night, actually, because I didn't know much about her. And one of the things I think that she really needs to focus on in St. Louis, because you want businesses to come back, and there's an element of working with businesses to bring businesses back.
Yes.
But businesses won't be down here if people don't feel safe. Now, I know I've heard them say, oh, crime numbers are down and all this other stuff.
Nobody believes that.
And nobody believes it.
Nobody.
So even if, and I don't know, you know, I've seen people fudge numbers and, you know, if crimes aren't being reported because they know that they're not getting prosecuted and all that other stuff and they're going to stop reporting them. Well, your reports of crimes are going to be down. That doesn't mean crime is actually down.
Correct.
But you need to focus on making people feel safe. So you come downtown and you feel safe downtown. If that's visual presence of more police officers, if that's knowing that police officers are actively policing and you know, not just kind of bystanders or whatever. And I'm not saying that St. Louis Police Department are, but I know that after having all those years of Kim Gardner, that can be very disheartening for a police department. And so one of the things that she needs to focus on is restoring that pride in the St. Louis Police Department, getting visual presence of officers, getting like, and I don't know how the mayor's office can do this, but boarded up buildings are bad for visuals and making you feel safe. You know, make downtown look appealing.
You need money.
They've got a huge settlement. And I don't know, have they ever decided what they're doing with the money from that Ram settlement?
No, so they haven't.
You've got a huge pool of money that you could actually get started on there. Get businesses to return to downtown. Get people, you know, working in downtown so that like they go out for lunch and all this other stuff, and that will build other businesses. I think really it all starts with making downtown feel safe. Because people, we talked about this in a meeting we had. It's hard to get people from the counties, be they Illinois counties or St. Louis counties, to come downtown.
Yes.
They don't feel safe.
They don't. And part of that, though, is this. It's an ideological issue. And here's the ideological issue. And we actually have models of how to make this work. The ideological issue is this. Progressivism, the idea of being a progressive, sees business as being the enemy. businesses are exploiters of people. If you are wealthy, that means you became wealthy by taking money from someone else. It's the idea that all of economics is a pie. And if your slice of the pie is bigger, then that means someone else's slice of the pie must be smaller because they see it as a zero-sum game. And so because of that, if you're anti-business, then you're never going to attract the businesses that need to come downtown because businesses pay taxes, employees pay taxes. And think about the cities where you all have been, where you felt safe. As you're thinking about those cities, I promise you that one of the things that made you feel safe was there were a lot of people there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And if there are a lot of people there, something has to bring those people there. They're just not showing up to panhandle. They're showing up for something, whether it's a sporting event, a restaurant, a bar, an activity, an event, a concert, something, right? And so this requires a plan. And if you look at the cities right now that have Democrat mayors, Nashville is a great example. Nashville has a Democrat mayor. But what have they done to build Nashville? They're a Democrat mayor, but they're not progressive.
Mm-hmm.
They're a Democrat mayor, but they recognize the city only works, whether it's from feeling safe, or being a hub, it only works when you attract businesses. And you can't attract a business if your worldview says businesses are evil. So I would hope that Kara Spencer, which it's a slim hope, I promise you, but she could set aside her progressivism and try to enact policies that attract businesses, that make people want to come downtown. Because right now, a progressive isn't going to make that happen because her worldview would prevent that from happening.
The other thing that's annoying about St. Louis is that there is a lot of opportunity for growth and business.
Oh,
and
yes.
There's so much beautiful architecture in St. Louis.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
And
gorgeous.
I'm not talking about like Soldiers Memorial and the library, no. Places that everybody knows.
The buildings.
I'm talking about just
buildings.
Average
office
buildings.
Yes.
There's just really cool looking stuff all over St. Louis, whether it be downtown, South City, North, whatever. There's a lot of opportunity. I do real estate. There's a lot of opportunity to buy pretty cheap real estate.
Yes.
If you knew it was headed in a certain direction. And I know a lot of people in that world who are just like, I'm just not going to invest there because I don't know where it's going. And I really don't know what kind of clientele I'll have right now and so on and so forth. You've got to go to businesses who are not out to destroy the world. I don't get that concept. People want to invest money in places where they think they can make back money, and it's cyclical, it's capitalism, it's what makes everything run.
And the biggest, one of the biggest gifts to the city is when you look at, it's not the Rams settlement money. That's a one time you spend it and it's gone. You have to have something that has continual and ongoing impact on the city. And you look at the National Geospatial Agency that's going to be locating in North St. Louis, and then you look at the Boeing F-47 that's going to be built in and around the airport. And you put those two together, and you have an opportunity to make St. Louis a tech hub that people would want to move here and work here. But you have to have a business environment that looks at them and says, you're not the enemy. You're someone that we actually want. Mm-hmm. And here are our policies that are designed to attract you, business, to locate in the city of St. Louis. And I don't know that a progressive can do that, because a lot of times that means reducing taxes. And they say, oh, those evil corporations don't pay enough taxes. Well, then you're not going to reduce taxes to give an incentive for a company to locate here. And I just hope that she gets some non-progressive advisors that will help her to create an environment that will, pardon the phrase, but make St. Louis great again, because that's what we need.
Going into Tuesday, which was Election Day, the Mark Cox Morning Show, they did their voter guide, and I know that Mark Reardon was talking about the election a lot, too. We didn't talk about it as much because our Illinois election was last Tuesday.
Yes.
So we talked a lot more about it the week before, but he was talking about it that morning. Mark was, and I do production here, and they sent me some liners on Monday. They said, oh, we want to play some liners going in and out of songs to remind everybody that it's Election Day. And one of the liners they wrote before the election was,
hoping for more than 14% turnout.
Oh.
And it was supposed to be a joke.
14%.
It ended up exactly 14% because that's what it always is, because the same few people that show up for these elections that decide everything. I do want to report, though, because I was hearing the results come in. If you live in Missouri, apparently, and you're conservative, apparently it just didn't go that well for you. I don't know that there were no wins, but they were few and far between. The exact opposite thing happened in Illinois. In Madison County, at least, Brad, I know you're not in Madison, but in Madison County, all the races I was watching went, I would say 80% of what we were hoping happened would happen, did happen.
Wow.
And
that's fabulous.
I'm in Collinsville, and we had really contentious local elections where it was like hard right, hard left, playing out on the national scale, like in your town. And these are people that you see at the store. You know,
so yeah.
You're like, why is this happening? But it was really, really contentious. And the people that you hoped would win generally did. And I just didn't think that got reported enough.
Because
the Missouri stuff didn't quite go as well as the Republican side was hoping. But I got to tell you, Madison County did really well in Illinois. Good. So,
well, speaking of voting guides, that's the biggest thing I miss about the Riverfront Times. I thought the Riverfront Times voting guide was the best ever, because whoever the Riverfront Times endorsed, I knew to vote for the other person, right? So it was almost like 100% accurate. If they said this candidate is who we endorse, you cannot go wrong voting for the other candidate. And I thought that was the most accurate voting guide that I had ever seen. Hey, we got to take a break here. We've got coming up, my goodness, on the last segment here on the Annie Fry Show, we'll be talking about the results of our poll. If you haven't done it yet, go to YouTube, type in Annie Fry. You'll have the date. You click on that. You can participate in the poll. In the next segment, we'll discuss the results of the poll right here on the Annie Fry Show, 97.1 FM Talk. Now, see, Ryan, you're just singing that. That singing voice of yours is perfect. You know, you've got a great singing voice, singing background here. That's fantastic.
And such incredible range.
Oh, yeah. You know, you sound better than Michael Jackson.
I sound better than everybody ever.
I'm the incredible range in the room here, okay?
Okay. All right.
Yeah. I always use the joke, I'll always be young. It comes over just about as well.
Forever young.
Forever young. And I'll always be young. See, with B, Brad Young, I'll always be young.
Oh, that's even better.
Yeah, that's my email address, be young, because it's good to be young. That's right. That is so squirrely. You know, I once worked on a political campaign for a person, I won't mention her name. But she was a dental hygienist, and we were talking about slogans for the campaign. She was running to be state rep, and in my my most facetious voice, I suggested, how about this? And remember, she's a dental hygienist, right? I said, how about this as a campaign slogan? Let's stop the decay in Jefferson City. And I thought everyone would start laughing because I was making a joke, right? And everyone went, oh, that's good. We should write that down. I thought, no, don't write that down. It's stupid. I was trying to be funny here. And everyone started writing it down. So
did that work? Did they use it?
No, they didn't. Thankfully, because that would have been colossally bad. Speaking of colossally bad, see, I got a habit doing this.
You're the best.
I got a habit of doing this. I do it at home too, and then my wife throws stuff at me. But Brad,
seems a little much.
It is
to be doing that at home, but
I know.
Okay,
we're gonna transition to this.
Yeah. I get that at the dinner table. I'll do that.
Yeah.
You know, speaking of this,
honey, are you ever not on?
Yeah.
Like, can you just be real with me for a second?
Well, you've been talking to my wife.
Speaking of mashed potatoes, have you considered our mortgage?
Yes. No. Speaking of mashed potatoes, you know, the cognitive ability of Biden's brain has been really impacted here.
That's pretty
because it was mashed potatoes.
And does dinner feel like a deposition?
You know, I work very hard. I'm going to tread carefully because my wife might be listening. I try very hard not to make conversations sound like depositions or cross-examination at trial. But the best example of this, one of my daughters was, I don't know, 5, and we caught her in a lie. It was a blatant lie.
I never thought about having a dad that was a lawyer.
It was the most blatant lie. And I sat her on the stairs, on the first step of the stairwell, and I'm cross-examining her for 20 minutes, and the girl would not crack. And after she wouldn't admit that she lied, even though we had evidence of it, I presented her with evidence of it, and she just kept saying, "Dad, I don't know what you're saying here, but I did not lie." And I gave her the evidence, and I gave statements from other people that proved she lied. She withstood all the cross examination, and then after it was over, my wife said, "Brad, you just got whooped by a 5-year-old." Yeah, some kind of good lawyer I am. So,
speaking of being a good lawyer.
No, that's not the topic at all.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was trying to help.
But here's the thing. One of the things that hasn't been discussed enough about COVID was all of the lies that we were told by the Biden administration. And I think it's important, not just because they were lies, but because this one singular event impacted the entire planet in a way that very few events ever have. And we were lied about how it started. We were lied to about how it was spread. We were lied to about how, that 6-year-olds had to be vaccinated when realistically and statistically 6-year-olds couldn't get it.
Mm-hmm.
We were lied to about who was impacted the most. We were told it impacts everyone equally when the stats now show that it was the old and people who already had pre-existing conditions. We were lied to at every stage. And we were even lied to. A report came out just this week that in the Biden administration was required by law in December of 22 to release the information about 7 U.S. military service members who contracted COVID-like symptoms in October of 2019. The Biden administration refused to release the information, and Congress never acted upon it. And now we know that where were these soldiers? They were in Wuhan, China.
Mm.
And in Wuhan, China, they contracted COVID in October of 2019. The Biden administration covered it up. Trump administration released this information this week. They said they were complying with the law because the prior administration did not. But at every turn, we were lied to about why COVID happened, how it happened, and where it came from. But I guess one of the questions that I have even to this day is why? Why were we lied to about all of this? Because a lie is typically told to cover up information that we don't want to have released. Why would the left lie about COVID? What was to be gained by those lies?
I think it's the same as anything else. It's money and power. Simultaneously, because you got the power of throwing off really the normal rule of law. There are ways you're supposed to vote. Now you don't have to do that now. There are ways you're supposed to handle emergency declarations. Now we'll just keep declaring them. You know, there are ways that you're supposed to handle the economy. Now we'll just shut it down. You know, there's a lot of power that they gained by mm-hmm. doing that, and they kept it for way, way longer than we were led to believe that they would. And that's what always is going to happen if somebody gets power. They're just going to hold on to it for as long as they possibly can. The second is money, and we know now how much money was flowing both from the government around to probably friends of people who were writing those checks. And then second, the pharmaceuticals absolutely bought off everybody.
Correct.
They bought off everybody, and to find out, and we knew this at the time. That's the thing. So much of this stuff, we knew when it was happening, that it was happening, but it felt like it was so important that we were still on the air that whole time, because we would scream it from the rooftops. We'd get banned from socials, and we're like, we just can't care. We have to keep saying it, but it was like you couldn't crack through the official facade because people were afraid, and they used that fear against people.
I think that there's also an element of Dr. Anthony Fauci, and there was an element of protecting him, because at the very beginning of this stuff, he, you know, whether or not this came from a lab, whatever, it was a wet market, was it naturally occurring? There's still so much fuzziness surrounding that. There's emails and emergency meetings that he called that, you know, the people are like, I don't know, this looks more like an engineered virus than not one. Then he calls this meeting and all these people flip 180 degrees. What role did the National Institutes of Health, was it Allergies and Disease or Health or Correct. Whatever that Fauci was a head of? What NIH. Role did it have in funding any sort of research that was going on at the Wuhan virology lab?
Yeah, and that's something that Rand Paul was really a very strong proponent of, is getting to the bottom of that. But when I ever talk to my progressive friends, and to me, I think this gets at the ideas of progressivism that are so repugnant among many, is this. When I talked to my progressive friends during COVID, and I said, it's obvious. All of the evidence points to it being a lab leak. Why can't we at least give the Americans the honest answer to where this came from? Here was the answer that I consistently received from progressives. Well, the concern is that Americans will then will try to retaliate against Chinese Americans, and that they will discriminate against Chinese Americans if they know where this virus actually came from. And my response to that was always the same. I said, okay, all right, let's go with that theory for a second, all right? Let's even assume, for purposes of discussion, that sort of retaliation would occur. You're really advocating that we should lie to the planet about the largest global pandemic that has ever existed since the middle centuries. We should lie about how it started in order to try to reduce discrimination that may or may not happen. And they said, yes. And so it was important to foster a lie in order to continue the ideology that people shouldn't be discriminated against. Now, I'm never for discrimination, but I'm also for the truth. Mm-hmm. We should have been told what happened, particularly at Brad Range, as you just mentioned. If we sent our tax dollars to China to develop the virus, or to develop the virus that eventually leaked from the lab, don't we have a right to know as taxpayers if we helped pay for a global pandemic? We have the right to know that as taxpayers. Oh, no. It came from a bat that ate a squirrel that sneezed on someone, and that's how they got COVID. No, that's not how it happened.
That same progressive ideology that you're talking about is the same ideology that sent hundreds of thousands of people into the streets in the midst of COVID to protest, because that was okay to protest, and you wouldn't get the virus. That wouldn't be a super spreader event, but going to church would be.
Yeah. And that's the point that I made over and over and over again. If you look at Nevada, casinos were open. Even though casinos are one of the biggest super spreaders, because people are drinking, laughing, smoking, and being in close proximity to one another, and yet churches were closed. And that, to me, revealed that it's all about money. Ryan, as you mentioned, it's all about money. And the state wanted the money from the casinos. Churches don't generate money. Let's shut down the churches, but leave the casinos and big box stores open. Brad Young, I've been sitting in today. Thanks for letting me hang out here.
Ethan just whispered to me that he doesn't know what he is in this poll. So you're just going to have to give the results and decide.
Okay, you're on, Ethan.
200 votes on today's YouTube live chat poll. Do you consider yourself blue collar, white collar, or another? We heard some of the responses in the chat. 11% say that they're the other option. 37% say that they're white collar, and the winner today, blue collar, 52%.
There
you
go. That's
great to know. That's great to know.
The people have spoken. Hey, stick around. Mark Reardon will be speaking a lot coming up for the next 3 hours. Stick around. 97.1 FM Talk.
Attention, ladies in the Leawood area. Beaumont Health and Wellness is here and offers award-winning wellness and beauty treatments like hormone therapy, weight loss, body contouring, microneedling, and injectables. Right now, get our $147 hormone replacement starter kit, including a private consultation, precision blood work, and a free B12 shot to recharge your body. Beaumont Health and Wellness, luxuriously bold, effortlessly sexy, undeniably you. Call 913-261-9855 or book now at BeaumontHealthKS.com.
MLB.TV is home to baseball's biggest stars. Watch every out-of-market game, live or on demand.
He got it! Woo! This is unbelievable!
Plus, you'll get 24/7 access to MLB Network. Stream every big pitch.
He struck him out!
Every home run.
Gone!
Everything baseball, all season long on MLB.TV. Start a free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Street Easy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House with a home theater sounds appealing. But that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, Street Easy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. StreetEasy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Nick's Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Nick's, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Nick's Menswear, your friend in style.
I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link.
And we're the hosts of the podcast Ear Biscuits. We're just two lifelong friends who've been talking about life for a long time.
From being dads to businessmen to all the random things we experience, nothing is off limits.
And now we're talking to you. We're answering your questions, giving advice that you may or may not want to take, and listening to your hilarious stories.
So leave us a voicemail to be part of the show at
1-888-EAR-POD-1 on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.